Welcome to the Shir Maral Gurayeh, Parshas Hayisara. The passage from the Maral that I want to look at today is particularly striking because the Maral is actually critical of Rashi. The Maral wrote his Gurayeh as a commentary on Rashi, and again, most of what he does is to try to explain very painstakingly why Rashi says what he does. You know, it's not meant to be critical of Rashi. But in the particular example we're going to see, the Maharal actually very respectfully, you know, takes issue with the way Rashi presents something, because the Maharal feels that whatever Rashi says in this particular comment falls short or reproduces inaccurately that which Chazal, the rabbis of the Talmud themselves, said. So it's great in authority as Rashi is for the Gurayeh. Chazal, the rabbis of the Talmud, on an even higher level, and even Rashi ultimately has to answer to the rabbis of the Talmud. So the context is Perichov Dalit, Pasuk Samech Zayin, towards the very end of the Sedra. So Eliezer has brought Rivka back from Haram for Yitzchak to meet and marry. Yitzchak marries Rivka, and it says that Vayivyeha Yitzchak Ha'olel Asara Imam. Yitzchak brought Rivka into the tent of his mother Sarah. Vayikachas Rivka, vatihilo v'isha vayehaveha. He married Rivka, she became his wife, and he loved her. Vayinachem Yitzchak acharei imo, and Yitzchak was finally comforted after the passing of his mother by virtue of the fact that Rivka, in many ways, was able to fill that void which had been left with the passing of Sarah. Comments Rashi, Ha'olel Asara Imo, Vayivyeha Ha'ohelo, V'naseis Zugmas Sara Imo. Rashi points out the simple meaning of the pasuk is that Yitzchak brought Rivka into the tent of his mother Sara. Right? Really, the proper way to say that, however, implies Rashi would be Vayivyeha Yitzchak brought her Ha'ohel Asara Imo. To the tent of his mother Sarah. What's Ha'olel Asara Imo? So the way Rashi reads the pasuk is it's as if there's a comma there. By the Yeho Yitzchak Ha'olelo, Yitzchak brought Rivka into the tent, comma, Sarah Imo. And all of a sudden, Rivka was transformed. Again, not literally, but was transformed, took the place of his mother Sarah. Kloma Zarehi Sarah Imo. There were things that Yitzchak saw when he brought Rivka into the tent that he had only seen when Sarah was alive. And now that Rivka was there, Sarah had the same things happen to her as had happened to Sarah during her lifetime. What were these things? So Rashi lists off three things. Shekol zman shesara kayemes, as long as Sarah had been alive, hayaner dolof ha'erev Shabbos ha'erev Shabbos. When she would light the candle on Erev Shabbos, it would burn for the entire week. Right? That was a sign of the bracha of the blessing that devolved upon the tent. She would light candles Erev Shabbos. It wasn't a 7-day candle, but somehow, miraculously, the candles kept burning from one Erev Shabbos till the next when she relit it. Secondly, when Sarah was alive, there was a blessing that was to be found in the dough. In other words, the dough was always good, it was always plentiful, it always rose well, it just, seemed to work out well. The anan kosher al ha'olel, and third, there was always a cloud, a cloud of glory that hovered over the tent, a sign of God's presence. These three things, the light, the bracha in the dough, and the cloud of glory that hovered over the tent, those were all present during the lifetime of Sarah. Mishenetza paskul. When Sarah passed away, says Rashi, all of these three things came to an end. Shabbos Rivka Chazru, and when Rivka came into the tent, all of a sudden these three miraculous things, or these three extraordinary things, returned to the home life of Yitzchak and Rivka. So Yitzchak said, my new wife Rivka, she's really, exactly, she occupies the very same position that my mother Sarah did, and he feels that, the legacy of Sarah has been continued through Rivka. Rashi quotes this from the Bereishis Rabbah, which Rashi quotes frequently, again, the most, well-known compendium of Medrash Haggadah on Sefer Bereishis. Okay, so far is Rashi. The Maharal starts off explaining Rashi, but then, as we'll see in a moment, he moves into critiquing Rashi. After Maharal, what's the significance of these three things? So these three random things, you know, that the light lasted from every Shabbos to every Shabbos, that the dough had a bracha that attached itself to it, that there was a cloud of glory that hung over the tent. You know, are these three random things, or is there something more to it? So says the Maharal, not surprisingly, there's something more to it. Neged Gimel Mitzvos. These three things correspond to the three mitzvos which are particularly associated with Jewish women. Right? We mention this in davening every Friday night. It's Mishnah B'mem Avrikin. Right, that women have a special attachment to the mitzvot of nidah, of observing the laws of family purity, of challah, of taking off challah from a dough, and of Ner Shabbos, and of lighting Ner Shabbos, right, not lighting Shabbos candles. So these three things, says the Maharal, correspond to those three mitzvot. Bracha mitzuya neged challah. The fact that the dough was blessed corresponds to the mitzvah of taking off challah. After all, we find the Pasuk in Yecheskel already tells us that the separation of challah brings bracha, brings blessing into the house. The Pasuk says in Yecheskel, when you take off the challah and give it to the Kohen, it brings blessing into the house. Good. The Ner Daluk, the candle that stayed lit from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, so that clearly corresponds, that clearly corresponds to the mitzvah of lighting their Shabbos, lighting Shabbos candles, which is incumbent upon women. V'anon kasher ala olel, the cloud of glory that hung over the tent. So that, v'anon hakovam, v'shchinas hakovam yisvara, v'zel l'kovar akdusha v'atahara. The presence of the cloud of glory symbolizes the presence of the Shekhinah, and the Shekhinah is brought into our lives, says the Maharal, through a commitment to purity and to sanctity. Right? And the purity and the sanctity is associated with the Taharas HaMishpacha, with the adherence to the laws of family purity, which the woman connects herself to. And a Tihatara, maybe with a Ruach HaKodesh, because I'm reading from the Sechus of Odezara, purity leads one ultimately, in the extreme case, to Ruach HaKodesh, to being able to commune with a godly spirit. And therefore Sarah, who was careful about the laws of Tumah V'Tarah, purity and impurity, particularly as they apply to her menstrual cycle, you know, she was careful about these laws of family purity, that was the source of this cloud of glory that hovered over the tent. So again, the three things are indicative, says the Maharal, of Sarah's extreme commitment to the three mitzvahs which are particularly associated with women. Fine, so that's a great explanation, works wonderfully. Only one problem, says the Maharal. What's that? No, that's not such a problem, because Avram kept Kol HaTorah Kulo before it was given. And I guess we assume that Sarah kept this mitzvah as well.
But she was over age, married.
Oh, but if you recall, so Rashi brings the beginning passage of Vayera that she miraculously had a return of her menstrual cycle.
She had a long child.
What's that?
Just to have a child. Basically,
yeah, okay. Well, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I don't think we have a record of that in Chazal, but I guess, you know, at the very least, you know, when it was relevant, she was careful about it. And, you know, the fact that, you know, it's possible that by the time of her death, you know, 137 is kind of old. 127, right? It's a little bit old. So it's likely that even miraculously she wasn't Anita at that point. But, okay, you know, whenever it was relevant, she was careful about it. So the more basic problem, always look up the original sources. Right? Rashi told us that, you know, what he's quoting is the Medrash and Bereishis Rabba, and, you know, he's Rashi, so we believe him, right? If you can't trust Rashi, who can you trust? But says it out, but if you look up the original, Rashi doesn't quite quote it accurately. If you look up the original, Amram the Bereishis Rabba, Amru Od Echo. If you look in the original Medrash and Bereishis Rabba, there were actually four things that were present during the lifetime of Sarah Imenu, disappeared after her death, and then came back when Rivka was brought into the tent. What's number four? V'husha Amru, Kol Zman Shesarah Hoysachaya, Hayadesa Pasuach Lirvacha. As long as Sarah was alive, her house was open wide, presumably to guests. In other words, you know, the doors were always open. Again, we know Chazal famously described the tent of Avraham Avinu as having doorways on all four sides, so that was typical of Sarah's house. The doors were wide open. It was an open house. Come in, come out, you know. Make yourself at home. And that stopped after she died, and that was restored, you know, when Rivka came into the picture. She wasn't necessarily available, but the doors were open. In other words, you know, you could come into the house. I guess she was in the back room, you know, wherever the tent was set up. So here, if you look at the original source in Bereishis Rabba, there are four things that characterized the home of Sarah Imenu and were reinstated with the arrival of Rivka. The Rashi Hishmet Echav, and Rashi trapped one of them. Rashi isn't quoting the letters entirely accurately. Rashi only quotes three. The Kitzel Divrei, and Rashi actually is abbreviating the original words of Chazal. So isn't that funny, says the Maharal? So why did Rashi do that? And here's Rashi quoting he tells you, he's quoting Bereishis Rabba, but he's not really quoting Bereishis Rabba. He's quoting three quarters. He's, you know, doing a 75% job in quoting Bereishis Rabba. He left out one of the things that characterized the home of Sarah Imenu. The Ulai, also them, it may show Shloshes and Shizachar, Yesh Town, Kamoshes Bar Lamala. Abo Kozman Shahis of Sarah Chaya, Hayabes of Sucha Lirvacha Eitam. So maybe, says the Maral, I'll suggest the following reason as to why Rashi omitted one of these four things. If you take out the idea that the house was wide open while Sarah was alive, so then you have a beautiful Dvar Torah connecting the three things, right? The bracha in the dough, and the candle that was lit from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, and the cloud of glory that hovered over the tent. You have a beautiful Dvar Torah to connect that to the three mitzvahs which are incumbent upon women, as I just explained, says the Maharal. Such a beautiful Dvar Torah. There's only one problem. You know, if there are four things that characterize the tent of Sarah Imenu, so there goes your Divine Torah, right? So maybe, says the Maharal, Rashi felt the need to drop one of these four things because he had a good explanation for three out of the four, but once he introduced the fourth, the explanation doesn't work anymore. So Rashi was selective in quoting the Medrash, says the Maharal, because Rashi, you know, understood the Medrash in a certain way. He understood the reason behind the Medrash in a certain way. But it didn't make sense when you had all four things. Okay, so, you know, what's the best answer to the question? Drop one of the four, and then you have a great Dvar Torah. Aye, that's not what Chazal said. Alright, so, you know, they say Yiddish, Fataisen Fardeset, right? You know, he translated it, and he made it even better. You know, he gave a better version of the Medrash, in his opinion. Because this fit this Dvar Torah concept, this rubric that Rashi had for himself. Now, clearly, we're going to see the Maharal is going to be critical of this. In other words, from the Maharal's perspective, if that's what Rashi was doing, in other words, Rashi was cutting and pasting the words of Chazal and dropping a phrase because he thought it didn't fit into the Dvar Torah, then, you know, as much covet as we have for Rashi, that's a terrible mistake, right? Because, you know, the four things which Chazal chose can't somehow just arbitrarily be reduced down to three. It's not just that there were, not just like Chazal was just saying, a lot of good things characterize the tent of Sarah Imenu. There must be something about these four things. What is it about these four things? So the Maharal then goes on to state the following. I'm going to read this paragraph. Not all of it will be immediately intelligible, so we'll go back, I mean, at least to me, maybe it won't be to you, but after I read it and just translate it basically, we'll go back and try to explain it a little bit deeper and try to understand what the Maharal might be saying. Hamnam, Mishirov Salama of Divrei Chazal, if you really want to understand the words of Chazal in the Medrash, Yesh lo lodas, ki elu hadvarim nisloim, more al-maylas sara. The four things which Chazal mentioned, not the three things of Rashi, but the four things which Chazal mentioned, are incredible windows into the greatness of sara. Shahaisa mispareches b'chol habrachos. Sara indeed was blessed with all blessings, and the four things which Chazal chose to highlight show us how Sara was blessed thoroughly with every possible blessing. Kimash Shaharya Anan Kosher Al Ha'ohel Hu Lamidas Avra. The fact that there was a cloud of glory hovering over the tent, that represents the Midah, the character trait of Avram Avinu. The Dover Zemavur, and this idea is well explained. Okay. Ubracha Mitsuya Ba'isa, the fact that there was a blessing in the dough, right, the second of the four things Chazal talk about. So, Kimosha Amarnu Lamala, the Kruas Lechlecha, Vavarechlecha, Zesha Omim Eloke Yitzchak. This corresponds to what we explained earlier in Tashis Lechlecha, where Rashi says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu, Lech Lecha, go out from your land, Va'avarechecha, and I will bless you. What does I will bless you mean? That's what later on the Jews are going to refer to God as Elokei Yitzchak, as the God of Yitzchak. U'misham HaBracha, and from there Bracha proceeds. U'lefikach Bracha Metsuya, and that's why the bracha is to be found, the blessing is to be found in the dough. Vidal Sosel, Suchim Lirvacha, the fact that the doors of the tent were open wide for anyone to come in. Huremez Rabirchos Yaakov, that hints at the brachos that were given to Yaakov Avinu. Ki Misham Harvacha Ba'ola Olam, because it's through those brachos that expansiveness comes into the world. So who Yodzua, and this is well known, the Ner Doluk Melel Shabbos Melel Shabbos, and the fact that the candle remained lit from one Erev Shabbos to the next Erev Shabbos, Hu Inyan Revi'i, that's a fourth idea, the Havein Zehetas, and contemplate and understand what I just told you very well. Alright, so most of you probably understood right away what this paragraph in the Maharal is talking about, but you know, just in case maybe one or two people didn't get it, you know, maybe we should go back and review it and try to understand it a little bit. Very, very cryptic paragraph in the Maharal. So let's try to unpack a little bit what's going on over here in the Maharal, again with the help of Rabbi Yeshua Hartman's beautiful notes on the Maharal, again, without which I think it would be very difficult to maneuver at all and try to understand what the Maharal is saying over here. But let's take the benefit of the notes that she provides us over here, very, very long notes, and try to understand what the Maharal is saying. So, first off, clearly one thing the Maharal is saying is that these four things that are mentioned by the Medrash are not arbitrary. Right? There's a significance to the number four, and there's a significance to the specific things which are mentioned. Right? That much is clear, and for that reason he's very critical of Rashi for having only quoted three out of the four things of the Medrash and dropped one. You know, if there's some significance to these four things specifically, by dropping one you kind of messed up, you know, the significance, and you know, it's not a small thing to not quote the Medrash accurately in that regard. No, that's one of them. In other words, the four things, there was a cloud of glory, there was a bracha in the dough, the candle remained, the doors were wide open, and there was a candle, the candle was lit from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. Those are the four things in the Medrash. So, A second thing we can glean from the Maharal is that at least three out of these four things hint to the three avos. That much the Maharal writes explicitly, right? That somehow the cloud is connected to the character traits of Avram Avinu, the bracha in the dough is connected to the character traits of Yitzchak, the fact that the doors were open wide is somehow connected to Yaakov Avinu, and then very cryptically the Maharal writes, and the candle, that represents a fourth thing. Zehu Inyan Revi, right? Which, again, is very tantalizing. Let me explain to you what this means. This means something else, right? So, what does that mean? But, the first three things have some kind of correspondence to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Okay, where do we go with this? Writes Rabbi Yeshua Hartman in the notes as follows. Shamati mechacham echam. I heard from a certain wise person. I guess he doesn't want to give away his sources. Everything here is very cryptic, right? But that's Rabbi Hartman, who's Baruch Hashem, still the Chayyim. Not just an old man, wrote this not so long ago. Shamati mechacham echam. Ki kavonas hagur arye kan he. Ki dalid dvarim elu hinam keneged dalid pinos hamer kava. The four things correspond to the four wheels of the heavenly chariot. What's the idea of the heavenly chariot, right? So, the beginning of Sefer Yechezkel, Yechezkel Hanavi sees this image of a chariot, which is carrying HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In broad terms, the chariot in their cover represents the idea of being able to bring God's presence into the world. Just as a chariot is a vehicle of transportation, so too the concept of the Merkava when applied to, to religious life is the idea of being able to transport the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into this world. God normally is transcendent, he's very great and omnipotent and someone that we wouldn't ordinarily be able to connect to. The Merkava represents that idea. The chariot represents the idea that somehow we can bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence into this world so we can experience Him. Again, obviously God is everywhere, but we can experience Him through the Merkava. Rashi also writes in last week's parasha, Ha'avos hein hein Merkava Lashchina. The Avos are in their own right a chariot to allow the divine presence to come into this world. In other words, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, what they were able to accomplish was that they were able to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu, relatively speaking, accessible to people in the world so that we could feel God's presence in a more direct kind of way. Okay, so Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are three out of the four wheels of the chariot, right? The chariot has three wheels. But if you have a chariot that only has three wheels, it doesn't run very well. I try taking one of the tires off of your car and see how far you get, right? It's not going to work very well. So who's the fourth wheel of the chariot? So traditionally, our understanding, based on the Zohar, is that David HaMelech is the fourth wheel of the chariot. Right, it's Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Zophis. And that's what we find in our tefillos, that we reference HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being associated with Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Zophis. In Shmoneh Esrei, we talk about God as being Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. In the brachos on the Haftorah, we talk about how God is Mogen David. He's the shield of David HaMelech, right? Those are the four individuals whose names make their way into our brachos. Interestingly enough, we don't mention Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't mention Aaron HaKohen, right? Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David. Those are the four individuals who brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence into the world and who are representative of the Merkava. Explains Rabbi Hartman, that's what the Maharal was trying to say about Sarah. Sarah herself was able to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world in the way in which Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David combined. were able to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. We needed the four of them in order to comprise the Merkava. Sarah was able, kivyachol, to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world on a unicycle. Right? She was able, with just one wheel, with just herself, to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu down into the world the same way that Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David, with their combined efforts, were able to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu down. So with that idea, right, let's go back to the Maral and see what he's saying a little bit. So first, the first aspect is the aspect of Avraham Avinu. The Anan Kasher Al Ha'ohel, the cloud of glory which was over the tent, represents the Mida of Avraham Avinu, says the Maharal, to Davar Zemavuar. And this is explained. How does it explain? What? Cloud equals Avraham Avinu? Where did we ever find that? Where does Avraham Avinu ever get involved in a cloud? So here too, we have to rely on Rabbi Hartman. And Rabbi Hartman refers us to a passage of the Maral in his Sefer Nesach Yisrael. And he writes that whenever you find a connection being forged between God and the people, that connection is represented by an anan hakavod, a cloud of glory. The role of the cloud of glory, the significance of the cloud of glory, is to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is being connected to people here on earth. So, what are examples of that? So, one example then is Har Sinai, right? The cloud comes down on Har Sinai, where God is revealing himself to the Jewish people in the most profound of fashions. When God's glory is in the Mishkan, the Anam, the cloud comes down upon the Mishkan. When the Jewish people are in the desert being protected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're surrounded by Anane HaKadosh, they're surrounded by clouds of glory. Whenever you have clouds of glory, it's representing the idea that Kivyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is being brought down into this world so we can appreciate it. Avraham Avinu is the first one to really spread the knowledge and the appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the first one who calls HaKadosh Baruch Hu Adon, Master, as per the Gemara. So that's, and that's actually so, that's what the Maral explains, that the idea of an anan hakavod, that a cloud of glory, has a particular relevance to Avraham Avinu, who's the first to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, meaning awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, into the world. We'll talk about the other three wheels of the Merkava over here, and we'll try to understand what the Maral is saying, that Hasara Imenu herself was equal to Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David all put together. Welcome to the second half of the Shir Maral, Parshas HaShavua, Parshas Chayisara. So we saw how the Maral is working off of the Rashi, where Rashi partially quotes a Medrash of Chazal. The Medrash describes, the way Rashi quotes the Medrash describes three things that were present in Sarah Yimenu's tent during her lifetime, and when she passed away they disappeared. When Rivka came into the tent, when she took the place of Sarah Yimenu, so these three things returned. Maral points out that in point of fact, if you open up the Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah, it's not three things, it's four things. One of the things that Rashi omitted from his count. And when the midst of explaining how the Maral says the four things mentioned by the Medrash are very significant, and it's not right to simply leave out one seemingly arbitrarily. All four are very important. What's the importance of the four? So we quoted Rabbi Yeshua Hartman in his notes to the Maral, where Rabbi Hartman explains that the idea the Maral is trying to put forward over here is that these four things represent the four wheels of the Merkava, the four wheels of the chariot, which in Jewish thought represents the idea that God's presence is being brought into the world. The four wheels represent in turn Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David. And Sarah Imenu had attributes equal to Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David. And that's the significance of the four things which are mentioned by Chazal in the Medrash, Sarah Imenu single-handedly was able to bring God's presence into the world in a way in which Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David were only able to do through their combined efforts. That's the basic idea, you know, which Rabbi Hartman wants to bring out over here. But now we're going back through the four things and trying to see how they correspond to Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David in turn. We just spoke about before Maariv how Avraham corresponds to the idea of the Anan Kashur, the cloud of glory, which was over the tent of Sarah. The cloud of glory, wherever it appears, always represents the idea that God's presence is being brought into the world, that we're able to connect the world to God in some way or another. And Avraham Avinu was able to accomplish that. You know, he was really the one who brought a consciousness of God into the world, you know, through thousands and tens of thousands of students. The guys around them describes he had many, many adherents. What happened to all of them is an interesting question, right? But the Rambam says that he had thousands and tens of thousands of people who were drawn to monotheism, you know, because of Avraham Avinu. He certainly brought the awareness of God into the world. Bracha Metziah B'Issa, the second of the four things mentioned by the Medrash, is that there was, you know, the dough that Sarah Imenu would need was affected by a particular blessing. There was blessing in the dough. So what does that mean? So the Maral connects that to Yitzchak Avinu. And that's, he explains, when back in Parshas Lech Lecha, God tells Avraham Avinu, Va'avarech Lecha, I will bless you. So Va'avarech Lecha means that people will refer to God as Elokei Yitzchak, as the God of Yitzchak. So there's some kind of connection between Bracha and Yitzchak. What's the connection between Bracha and Yitzchak? So I'm going to present my understanding of what the Maral says over there in Parshas Lech Lecha. Again, like many things, you know, this is the Maral filtered through me, so it may or may not be correct. I'll give you the best of my understanding, and then if you want to look at the Maral at the beginning of Lech Lecha, and you come back and you say, you know, you're totally wrong, so that's fine, just don't say it on tape, you know, but, you know, this is my understanding of the Maral. So we find that physical prosperity, material prosperity, is associated with the north. Where do we find that? So in the Beit HaMikdash, the Shulchan, the table upon which the Lechem HaKonen, the showbread, sat, which represented the idea of bringing material prosperity into the world, that table was on the northern side of the Beit HaMikdash. And that apparently is not by accident. Chazal tell us in the Gemara Bava Basra that Harosa Shiyashir Yastin. If you want to become rich, you should face north or a little bit north when you daven Shmoneh Esrei. By the way, you'll notice our Beis Medrash faces south. What that means practically, I'll leave that to you to figure out, right? But if you want to become rich, you should face north, because after all, the shulchan, the table with the lechem aponim representing wealth, material prosperity, was on the northern side of the Beit HaMikdash. So, you know, that's where you should face for wealth. What's the connection fundamentally between north and wealth, right? So the word for north in Hebrew is safon. And Safon really is related to another word in Hebrew, which is Safun, which means hidden. Why is the word for north the same, pretty much, as the word for hidden? Because the word for north describes the sun. The sun tends to be hidden on the northern side of the sky. You talk about, you know, you buy an apartment, you want a southern exposure, because there'll be a lot of light coming into the apartment. Most people don't buy an apartment with the northern exposure, I guess. That's if you can't afford, you know, a nicer apartment, you get with the northern exposure. What's that?
In the northern hemisphere.
Right, in the northern hemisphere, right. In the northern hemisphere, you know, the northern side is going to be dark, right, darker. There's less exposure to the sun on the northern side. Okay, so that's interesting. So that's why the words safon and safun are really the same word. North is hidden, because north represents that side where the sun is, relatively speaking, hidden away. Okay, but then why would north be associated with wealth? right? So here, right at the Maral, we find a statement in Chazal, Ein ha-bracha mitzuya ela b'davar ha-samoy min ha-ayin. Bracha tends to attract, to be attracted to things that are hidden. Right? In other words, the more you start counting your money and trying to find, you know, the blessing, the more the blessing is going to elude you. You really want blessing? Don't look so carefully. Don't look so carefully at things. You know, the bracha, the way the Rav Shalom made the world, is that bracha sneaks up on you. Right? If you're going to be too focused, you're going to micromanage things too much, right, so you'll miss the bracha. You know, God wants the bracha to sneak in when you're least expecting it. Right? So that, says the Maharal, was the connection between Safon, Safun, and material prosperity. Bracha. You really want material prosperity? So try to keep things on the QT. And this doesn't mean you have illegal bank accounts in Switzerland. I don't think that's what he means. Right? You know, that might work for a little while until they catch up with you. That's not a good idea. Right? But in other words, in general, if a person, you know, you want bracha, it's a moral idea to a large extent. You know, people who are flashy and flamboyant don't see bracha in their lives. People who are quiet and hidden and keep everything, you know, a little bit more sedate, that's where bracha is able to come in. When things are under the radar, not in a legal way, but just in a quiet way, that's when bracha is able to come into our homes. Right? It's a very, very profound idea. Yitzchak Avinu was the most private of the Avos. What do we know about Yitzchak Avinu? Almost nothing. Right? I mean, just think about in Chumash, right? Lech Lecha Vayera Chayisara is all about the life of Avram Avinu. Right? Basically, from Toldos until the end of Sefer Bereishis, you know, it's all about the life of Yaakov Avinu. And Yitzchak Avinu, then it's, you know, a few chapters in Toldos, part of Toldos, maybe part of Vayera, you know, and he's a very, you know, he's very much below the radar in Chamisha Chumashe Torah. And that seems to have characterized the avoda of Yitzchak Avinu. You know, Avram Avinu, you get the impression that he was an extrovert. You know, you kind of get the impression that if you were to meet Avram Avinu in the street, he'd be pulling you over, be putting tefillin on you, making you bench lulav and esrog. If it was sukkahs, you know, he'd be drinking wines with you. You know, it's chevron a little bit. Yitzchak Avinu, you kind of get the impression that, you know, he went into Beth Medrash, he sat in the corner, he learned, he put a talus over his head, and he sort of shut out the world. You know, it was much more of an introverted kind of avoda. Parenthetically, that's, some say, the explanation. All those Talmidim of Avram Avinu, where'd they go? Right? So, you know, it's easier to be the Talmud of a charismatic, extroverted personality. It's a lot harder to be a Talmud of someone who's much more introverted and private. So after the mantle of leadership passed from Avram to Yitzchak, a lot of those Talmidim said, you know what? We're going to find ourselves another yeshiva. You know, this we want a Rosh Yeshiva who can relate to us. You know, Yitzchak Avinu is sort of, you know, a little bit apart from everyone else. He's private. He's a very quiet kind of person. And yet, material prosperity is associated with that very attribute of quietness and privateness, right? You know, when things are somewhere in ha'ayin, when things are hidden from the eye, that's when the bracha comes in. So that's va'avarechecha elokei Yitzchak. I will bless you. People will say that Hashem is the God of Yitzchak. That's why the bracha mitzuyah ve'isa, the fact that Sarah Imenu had bracha attending itself to the dough which she needed, that's something which is associated with Yitzchak Avinu, that material prosperity. The third item, which is mentioned in the Medrash and omitted by Rashi, is Beis HaPasuach L'Ravacha, right? Notice that the house of the tent of Sara Imenu was always wide open. That's associated, says the Maharal, with Yaakov. Why? Yaakov, we find, is associated with expansiveness. Right? Yisham harbacha ba'al la'olam. Through the brachos of Yaakov, expansiveness comes into the world. So what is that idea there? Right? So, we know that regarding Yaakov Avinu, he's promised what Chazal refers to as a nachalah b'li mitzarim, an inheritance that has no borders. Right? Ufarasta Yama Vakema Sakhara Vanegwa, you Yaakov Avinu will spread out north, south, east, and west. You're gonna spread out incredibly. What does that mean? So I just on the simplest of levels, again, it's my own understanding. Yaakov Avinu is the one who really creates the nation. I mean, after all is said and done, Avram Avinu spreads the idea of monotheism. He brings that idea into the world. Yitzchak brings material prosperity into the world. Yaakov creates a real religion with real followers because he has 12 children, you know, 12 sons who carry on the legacy. He creates the Shvatim. He creates Klal Yisrael. So that's Harvacha. That's really expansiveness. He took an idea, which was the idea of a select few, and he really built a nation out of it. Right? So the whole idea of Yaakov Avinu is associated with expansiveness. That's the idea of the tent of Sarah Imenu being open on all sides, you know, to enable, you know, so many people to come in and partake. That's, you know, that's the bechina, an aspect of the expansiveness of Yaakov Avinu. Was in the tent. Right. So someone raised earlier, Sarah was in the tent. So yes, she herself was not. No. She herself might have been hidden in the tent, but the idea was the tent was open. In other words, you know, the shaft was on the table. Come in and help yourself. You know, there was a certain openness that was there. How is that different from Avram Avinu? Not substantially, but I guess what the Maharal is saying is that Sarah Imenu planted the seeds for the ability to build a nation. Right? Something which Avram Avinu was only able to do really in conjunction, you know, with Yaakov Avinu, but Sarah Imenu had already, you know, had this korach, this power within her that would ultimately become, you know, the spreading of the nation of Klal Yisrael. So this idea of Harvacha. Right? Finally, the Maharal says Ner Dolok Ner Shabbos Leil Shabbos Hu Inyan Revi'i the Hadein Zehetev. The fourth thing that was associated with Sarah Imenu was the lamp that burns from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. That's this fourth idea. So, again, based on this setup that, you know, the Maharal is setting up for us and that Rabbi Hartman has explained to us, the fourth aspect of Sarah Imenu is the aspect of David HaMelech. Right, how does David HaMelech relate to the lamp that burns from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos? That we find with regards both in Tanakh as well as in our Tfilos that the kingship, the dynasty of David HaMelech is referred to as a lamp. Right? We talk about it on the davening in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We look forward to that day where we have Arichas Ner Leven Yishai Meshichecha. Right? Where we set up a lamp for Ben Yishai, the son of Yishai, your Moshiach, right? So the Kosher says, Arachti Ner Lim Shichi, I have set up a lamp for my Moshiach. The idea of Moshiach coming, in other words, the idea of a dynasty which will ultimately result in some kind of utopia is related to the idea of lighting a lamp. Lighting a lamp is symbolic of the idea of some kind of royal dynasty. So the lamp of Sarah Imenu hints to this idea of the dynasty of David HaMelech, which is the fourth piece of the Merkava, which is being set up over here. The Kitzur, to sum this up in somewhat non-Kabbalistic terms, again, I hope I'm correct in the summary, the Maharal is saying Sarah Imenu had four attributes, which are really attributes of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David together. She was able to bring God's presence into the world. She was able to, like Avram, she was able to bring material blessing into the world, like Yitzchak. She was able to spread, to conceive of the idea of this belief in God as not being simply the belief of a family, but of a nation, this idea of Harvacha, like Yaakov Avinu. And she could conceive of the notion of a dynasty. You know, ultimately, like David HaMelech, those are the four things which Sarah Imenu, again, maybe was able to actualize, maybe just had a vision of these things. Maybe that's, you said that Sarah had greater Nevi'ahs than Avram Avinu. Maybe Avram Avinu couldn't envision having a nation come out from him. You know, maybe he just, you know, thought in terms of, you know, there's me, there's my son, you know, there's the family, we'll carry on. Sarah Imenu had this vision of a monarchy, of a nation, of tremendous material prosperity, of the whole world being connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what these four things represent, the tremendous vision of Sarah Imenu, which it took four men to be able to have that same vision. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and David, Sara Imenu was able to do that all by herself. That's the significance of these four things that Sara Imenu then was able to pass on to Rivka, that Rivka captured these four things in her own way when she came into the family of Avram Avinu. I'm not looking to point fingers. I'm just, mentioning the reality.
I'm trying to say that is that also a possible scenario in terms of what happened?
Yeah. We don't really know what happened. It's striking that they sort of just fell off.
There's no reference.
Yeah. In other words, they just kind of disappear. So where'd they go? Like the Maharal. Just in summary, I wrote this at length because I want to drive home a point, says the Maharal. When Chazal say something, don't try to make it better in your own words. Right? If Chazal say there were four things that Sara Imenu had during her lifetime, don't tell me there were three things. He called the van the Chachma of the Shir. Everything Chazal say is with wisdom and with exactitude. Not more, not less. When they said, they talked about four things, it wasn't an arbitrary number. It couldn't have been five things, it couldn't have been three things. They were speaking about four things in particular because they wanted to drive home this idea of Sarah being a Merkava Lashchina, a chariot for the divine presence, the same way that Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David were. V'hine Rashi Rotsa L'chaser Midivrei Chazal. Rashi, in only quoting three out of these four things, was subtracting from the words of Chazal. Kihem Amu Dalet V'hu Hevi Rakimo. They said four things, he brought three things. V'hine Zachisarim Rakavana Asher Rotsu Chazal. And by doing so, Rashi takes away from the intent that Chazal had over here, and again, as we said at the outset, obviously the Maharal had the greatest respect, for Rashi, this whole, that commentary on the words of someone whom you don't have the most profound respect for, but in the end of the day, the Maharal is saying, but if Rashi is going to go against Chazal, I'm going to defend Chazal, even if it means not standing by Rashi's side. That's the incredible exactitude that the Maharal believed was in Chazal, and you did not have the right to just quote loosely. If you're going to quote, you have to quote precisely, because otherwise, in quoting imprecisely, you can actually change the intent of what Chazal had in mind.
Isn't Rashi Chazal also?
No, Chazal means the Chacham of the Gemara. So in other words, if the if the Medrash presented a certain perspective, Rashi, as a Rishon, as great as he was, as far as Rashi HaKadosh, the holy Rashi, as great as he was, you can't play fast and loose with the words of Chazal, quote it exactly verbatim, otherwise you can distort the intent of what Chazal had in mind.
What was the 13
The three things? That the tent was open,
So it
could be that that's what prompts Rashi to leave it out. In other words, because the other three things are all things that are bestowed by heaven. The Oh, Pesach Rebacha sounds like just an attribute that Sarah had. She always kept the doors open. Right, so that could be why Rashi left it out. Chazal don't say that, they're only counting things which are bestowed by heaven. There's four characteristics of the tenth of Sarah. Right? So again, it could be that Rashi looked at that and he said, I'm only gonna count the things that, are heavenly bestowed,
How much went away when Sarah died?
In other words, after Sarah died, So, you know, the servants kept the doors locked. You know, they said, you know, again, very simply, Rivka came and she opened up the doors again. It doesn't have to be supernatural, which is maybe why, you know, Rashi leaves it out, but the Maral says it, but there's a reason Chazal put it in there. You know, Chazal realized that it was not supernatural as opposed to the other things. It's done with tremendous precision and tremendous exactitude. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, we'll wish everybody good Shabbos, and we will pick up again next week, following Mincha.